This is Shine On, the Health and Happiness Show, with new episodes every week on how to live well. Shine On is heard all over the world as a podcast, but it's heard first on the radio in New York's Hudson Valley. Hi, it's Casey. Thank you so much for tuning in to Shine On. You know, life. At the heart of life, people. And that's what we're going to talk about today. People. You can't avoid them. It's really what life is all about. And our guest today is Dr. Peter Hartman, who has known his share of people, a distinguished physician who spent 5 decades practicing family medicine and psychiatry. A U.S. Air Force veteran, Dr. Hartman trained at the University of Maryland and Shepherd Pratt Hospital. So we have psychiatry and family medicine together. Dr. Peter Hartman, I know you're retired now, but a dual practice like that, was that rare? It feels to me like it may have been.
It is quite rare, actually. The last time I know of that they actually looked into how many people are board certified in both family medicine and psychiatry was 1995, when both boards were trying to get together to see whether they could create a combined residency, which they ultimately did. In any case, during that year, there were 40,000 psychiatrists, and 39 of them were double boarded.
39 out of how many?
40,000.
Wow.
So it is rare.
Yeah, it is rare. Fabulous. And you did it for a good long time, but now you have a new podcast called The Mind Doctor. Are these stories in your podcast based on real people, or do you have another talent, which is also creative writing?
Well, it's actually a blend. In many ways, the lead character in the series is modeled after me. The way they say it is inspired by. But some of the cases that we have are ones that I saw. Others are ones that my colleagues had seen and discussed with me. And still others I just know from the medical literature. But the lead character is Dr. Bruce Young. He trained in both internal medicine and psychiatry, and then also did a fellowship in forensic psychiatry, which is the relationship between psychiatry and legal matters. And so he does all of those. He's a lot like the character House in that TV series.
Yes.
He's an internist who makes diagnoses of complicated and rare situations. He also is flawed. Well, I modeled Dr. Bruce Young after him in that respect. You know, the character Sherlock Holmes was done by Conan Doyle, and he was a physician. And he had a professor that he really admired who could figure out what was going on with patients that nobody else could figure out. And he had a very specific way of going about it. And so he created the character Sherlock Holmes to use that same approach, but for solving crimes rather than medical problems. And so Dr. Young is the same way. He uses that same kind of approach to solving complicated medical and psychiatric problems.
We're talking to Dr. Peter Hartman, both a physician and a psychiatrist, and now the mind behind The Mind Doctor. So tell me, which is a wonderful podcast, tell me what role you play. Are you voicing a character? Are you writing the script? Like, where do we find you in this?
Okay, well, first, let me point out, you mentioned both a doctor and a psychiatrist. All psychiatrists are medical doctors.
Of course.
And,
yes.
And that's one of the reasons, why I'm doing this, is if I had a nickel, every time people referred to me as a psychologist, I'd be rich. But I'm not a psychologist. I had to learn a lot of psychology, but I'm a psychiatrist. And why that matters is that psychiatrists are all first and foremost medical doctors. And we have to have training after 4 years of medical school in internal medicine or pediatrics and neurology, and then we get to do our psychiatry training. And the reason for that is we need to sort out whether your psychiatric symptoms are pure psychiatric illness, or is it the result of a medical illness that creates that symptom, or the side effect of a medication, because the treatment is dramatically different. I'll give you an example from my own experience. I was working in a family medicine office, and one of the staff members said, "Dr. Hartman, I need your help. I am so anxious I'm ready to jump out of my skin. I have no idea why I'm anxious. Everything is going along fine. But for the last few weeks, I've got more and more anxious. I'm shaky and sweaty and I can't sleep and I'm losing weight and I think I'm losing my mind. Can you help me? So I did a targeted physical exam and I palpated the gland in the front of the throat that's shaped like a bow tie. It's the thyroid gland. And that produces the hormone that affects our metabolism and other things. It was enlarged and tender and soft. So I knew she had an overactive thyroid gland, which I verified with a blood test. Sent her on to an endocrinologist who treated her with radioactive iodine. Her overactive thyroid called hyperthyroidism went away and the anxiety totally disappeared as well because the anxiety was only the result of the thyroid hormone problem. Imagine if I had sent her off to a therapist and said, well, let's talk about how you're feeling. No, that would have delayed care. She could have had a thyroid storm and died. So you can't miss things like that. That's the unique role that a psychiatrist plays because we first figure out, is this a result of a medical condition? Is it a side effect of a medicine? And then they say, okay, no, those are all fine. So this now is a straightforward, pure anxiety disorder. And then we might prescribe medication. We may then refer them on for therapy if we don't do therapy ourselves. And for better or for worse, most psychiatrists no longer do therapy. They're trained in it, but they don't really use it directly. Anyway, so what you were asking me, though, is what's my role with the mind doctors? Well, I came up with the idea, and in fact, the mind doctor was the name I gave to it. What I really wanted was to create a television series about psychiatrists that would hopefully be fascinating, interesting, but then also educational by watching them at work. What do they really do? And how is it different than a therapist, for example? And I wanted to do that based upon my experience during my family medicine residency, which was the first one I did. Family medicine was a brand new field then. It was taking the place of general practice. And the guys who started it thought, the general public's not going to know the difference. What is family medicine? What do they do? What's there different about their training? So they thought, maybe if we had a TV series about family doctors, that would be a way to educate the public while entertaining them. And so they did. And that's how the TV series Marcus Welby, MD, came about. And it so happened that my chairman was one of the people who started all that. And so I was thinking, you know, people don't understand the difference between psychiatrists, psychologists, and therapists, and so on. So maybe we could do the same thing for psychiatry that had been done for family medicine. That's how I got the idea of doing it. And so I wanted to come up with a TV series. I was lucky enough to be able to join forces with Voyage Media. And they said, well, let's start with a podcast. Because if that works, then when we go to try to sell the idea for a TV series, they can listen to the podcast. They, oh, that's what they're talking about. So that's the reason for the podcast. My role with the podcast was, of course, you know, I came up with the title, I came up with the characters and so on. But I also came up with the cases that they're taking care of. So that all the cases are medically valid. I didn't dream up something that doesn't exist. I did hire a script writer because I'm not a professional script writer to write the script and to make it more dramatic because we want it to be interesting, fascinating, people wanting to listen to that. And as a side effect, learning about the role of psychiatrists and their unique contributions. I'm listed as an executive producer because I was involved with every one of the 8 episodes. And by the way, if people want to listen to them, and I hope some will, because the more people listen, the more feedback we'll get and how to make things better. Go to Apple Podcasts. It's free. They do have a few ads. They're real short right in the beginning. You can do a review at the end after you've listened to them all. Each episode's about 25 to 30 minutes long.
Great.
And they all have an interesting case in them.
Well, you're listening to Shine On, the Health and Happiness Show right now, and we're talking to Dr. Peter Hartman about his podcast called The Mind Doctor, which I'm beginning to understand is a drama, a la the TV show House. We have an interesting physician and the interesting cases he comes up against. And I thank you for the clarity about psychiatry, because although I always knew psychiatrists were doctors, I didn't realize that they had to have all the medical training that other doctors have to have for the reasons you explained, right? To first rule out physical symptoms from mental health symptoms. And the one that comes to mind that many people who are caring for elderly parents is UTIs, right? So I've had so many friends call me and say, oh my God, you know, my parent, my grandparent, they're having a psychiatric or psychotic episode. I'm like, you know, get to the urgent care. It could just be a UTI. And a couple of times it's been a UTI. Why?
Absolutely.
Why does that present as temporary insanity or something?
Well, it really only happens in people who have an underlying brain condition, like some mild dementia, maybe even severe dementia or something like that. So it's an aggravating condition because of the inflammation and the immune system changes that occur due to the infection.
Okay.
So, yeah, that's something that we need to think about with anyone who has a dementia when they seem to get worse suddenly is, do they have a urinary infection or another infection or something else medically going on?
That's aggravating that. You said many psychiatrists don't practice psychology. Is that what you said?
I said they don't do therapy.
Therapy.
Psychotherapy. We used to, all psychiatrists did both psychotherapy and medication management, diagnosis, that sort of thing. But over time, because there are psychologists, social workers, and other types of therapists who can do the therapy part of it, the insurance company said, look, they don't charge as much as you psychiatrists do because of all your years of training and your doctors and all of that. We want you to just limit yourselves to making diagnoses, making sure there's nothing physically going on, and using medication, ordering tests as needed, and then other types of treatments that only physicians can order, like repetitive transcranial magnetic stimulation as a treatment for severe depression. So that's your role. If they need therapy, we'll send them to a therapist, a psychologist, or others, because they can do that perfectly well. And for that reason, because insurance companies pressured psychiatrists, don't do the thing someone else can do. You do what you can uniquely do. More and more of them have stopped doing the therapy. Now, some of this, I'm included, and my lead character, Dr. Young, also does therapy as well as the diagnosis and the treatment things. I found combining therapy with the whole medication piece of it to be very helpful. Because, you know, I can communicate with myself. I know what they're telling me in therapy, and I can think through, well, what does that have to do with the medications I'm using? Or should I order another test to make sure there's nothing medical happening here that I hadn't thought of before? And that kind of thing. Unfortunately, there's not a lot of communication often between the psychiatrist who's handling the medical piece and the therapist. They don't share notes and that kind of thing. And that creates a problem. I was lucky enough that one of the things I did was I worked in the student health center at a college in York, Pennsylvania before I came down to Florida. And we had therapists there. And I actually met with the therapist every week and we discussed cases that we were seeing together and we shared information. It could make a huge difference. Sometimes the therapist would hear or see something that I hadn't seen or heard from the patient and vice versa. And it could make a huge difference in how we would approach things. But unfortunately, that's rare.
Yeah. And talking to you now, it just makes perfect sense that it shouldn't be rare. That if someone's seeing a psychiatrist and a therapist, those two professionals should be comparing notes, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. That's the optimal thing. But it just doesn't happen that often. You know, there are reasons for it, but we should overcome those reasons and make it happen more often.
We're talking to Dr. Peter Hartman. He is the mind behind The Mind Doctor, which is a dramatic podcast. Season one had 8 episodes, and it was very well received. Will there be a season 2?
We don't know yet. And part of the reason why I say that is, as I told you earlier, my main goal was ultimately to have a television series. I hope the idea catches on well enough. And so our time, money, and energy is going to go towards that. But if that doesn't happen for whatever reason, or maybe doesn't happen for a long time, it's possible we'll create another series.
I have to go back to what you said about some sort of magnetic therapy.
Yes.
You went like this, you touched your head. I know that therapy. What are you talking about?
Oh, okay. Well, there is a therapy and it's called repetitive, meaning you do it over and over again. Magnetic therapy, what it is a large magnet that is placed against the side of the head in a specific location on the side of the head where magnetic energy is put into the brain and it affects the neurons, the nerve cells in the brain. So they reorganize in a way that helps to treat severe depression. So it's mostly reserved for people who have so-called resistant depression, meaning they've had at least 2 different antidepressant medications at full doses for a long enough period of time and they're still depressed. Now, what do we do? Well, one of the options, there are several options, but one of them is to use this treatment. It's done as an outpatient. It doesn't have any side effects other than a mild headache sometimes. It's very safe. And you come in and you get these treatments until the depression resolves. And it doesn't always work. Nothing always works for anything in medicine. But it usually does, and it's been a dramatic breakthrough because it's a safe outpatient treatment for patients whose depression doesn't respond to standard treatments of a combination of therapy plus medications.
How does the magnet know how to rearrange my neurons?
Right. It doesn't know, but the energy comes in and they react to it. You probably know about ECT, electroconvulsive therapy, that uses electrical energy to do that. That's been around forever. It's also very effective and powerful for resistant depression and suicidality and other things, but it requires anesthesia. You can do as an outpatient, but you generally have to start as an inpatient. It's very expensive. It can have more side effects than this magnetic approach does. But basically, you're creating an energy in the brain, and the brain responds by trying to reorganize itself. Okay. And that reorganization is what resolves the problem.
We're talking to Dr. Peter Hartman, the mind behind the dramatic podcast called The Mind Doctor. Thinking back to the beginning of our conversation when we talked about how psychiatrists need to be medical doctors first, I think about how many people ended up probably in insane asylums or institutions back, say, in the 1700s when our medical knowledge was more limited, right?
Oh, absolutely. In fact, one of the most common reasons for admission to a psychiatric hospital way back then was due to psychosis, which turns out to have been due to syphilis. And of course, they didn't know what it was. They didn't have any treatment for it. And it did affect the brain. It affects the whole body, including the brain. And, you know, they were just sort of housed there and they had people there to take care of them, but you couldn't really do anything about the underlying cause. Now we almost never see it. I've never seen a case of syphilis doing that because we have penicillin and other treatments and we have tests for it and so on. So it's not the scourge that it once was. Right. Now, oddly enough, this is an aside, it's actually increasing in frequency in our country. So the doctors need to be more alert to keeping an eye out for it, but you don't want it to progress to where it causes anything serious.
Dr. Peter Hartman, the podcast, The Mind Doctor, we hope it will be a TV show one day. I have two questions. Do you watch Shrinking?
I haven't watched Shrinking. Well, I have watched a lot of House. I'm fascinated by his diagnostics, acumen, but also he's a flawed character. And so I made sure that Dr. Young had some flaws too as a human being. So it's not just about the medicine. It's about,
right, it's about
the
people,
characters, their lives, their interactions with one another and other people. You know, we want them to be interesting and charismatic people that you want to watch and hear.
Yeah, Shrinking is funny, but I haven't learned anything about psychiatry from Shrinking. However, I would like to know if you were going to cast the movie or the television show, who would you like to play Dr. Young?
Wow, that's a great question. I haven't given that any thought. My wife knows what I'm doing, of course, and she loves the main character in a TV series about lawyers. I have no idea whether he'd even be available or whether he'd be good. I actually, if this TV series does come about, I am certain I will have nothing to do with selecting the actors. That's not my thing. Whatever company agrees to do this, they will have people who figure out who would be good actors for the different roles. In fact, the actors for the podcast, I had nothing to do with choosing them. They're all in Los Angeles. I'm in Florida. And we have a whole team in Voyage Media that know the different voice actors is what you use for a podcast. And they're the ones that selected them and oversaw what they did and were on the spot producers.
Well, I'm sure they're thrilled to be doing it. And I bet they're having a wonderful time and hoping for a season two like the rest of us. When we talk about people and how their minds work, I know you have written and spoken a lot about happiness and also loneliness, which is kind of epidemic right now. How did loneliness become epidemic?
Well, it's interesting. It did, and it's probably for cultural reasons, mainly. And one of the big cultural factors is the use of social media. I'm sure you've been to restaurants where there's a husband, wife, and their two kids sitting at a table, and they're all looking at their own either iPad or iPhone or what have you. They're not talking to each other. They're not looking at each other. They don't even reach out and touch one another. So you can be very alone in the midst of a crowd. There's a difference between being alone and being lonely. And loneliness is a big problem that affects you negatively for your physical and your mental health. And it was known to be an epidemic before COVID came, but COVID made it worse because we were forced to become isolated to reduce the spread of the infection. And so that's made it dramatically worse. But there's a lot of evidence that social media, people really looking at this little machine in front of them rather than looking another person in the eye, reaching out and touching them, that sort of thing, has made us more and more lonely. And we need to do something about that.
So what should we do? What should anybody listening right now, if they're lonely and they need companionship? I mean, I can't imagine that once you're feeling lonely, you feel motivated to do much of anything.
Well, you can certainly feel depressed and downhearted when you're lonely, that's for sure. And it can even become a clinical level of depression and anxiety. So if that's the case, you should probably seek therapy to help you with that. But if it's you're lonely, but it's not that bad, there are some very positive things to do. The first thing is to reflect on, why am I lonely? Is it because I don't have friends or because I'm dissociated from my family? Like 1 in 9 families, at least one person won't talk to another person because of political differences, which seems tragic to me, you know? You're familiar with that phenomenon. Yeah, there you go.
In my head.
There you go, yeah. So, you know, figure out what the reason is for it. Another reason might be that you're isolated. You have a disability, you're wheelchair bound, and you live by yourself. Well, how do you get out? How do you do things with people? Could it be that you have a vision or hearing problem and that makes it difficult to interact with others? So you need to figure out why you're lonely and then deal with the underlying cause. But another thing to do in any case is based upon Sutton's Law. I don't know if you know about Sutton's Law, but Sutton was a bank robber. This is a real guy, and he would rob multiple banks, sometimes more in one day, more than one. And one day the police said to him, Sutton, why do you rob banks? He said, well, because that's where the money is. So that's the same idea here. If you're lonely, you have to, well, where are the people? That's where you need to go. So to join a club, join a church if you don't belong, go to their group activities, join your local community center, especially if you're elderly, they have them for your age range. The AARP also has a special program if you're a member. I think you have to be 50 or 55 to join, whatever. But anyway, they do. They connect an elderly person with a student. And they both benefit from that relationship.
That's brilliant.
So that's just another way you do it. Talk to your neighbors. A lot of people don't even know who lives next door to them. Now, if you're a very shy person, introverted, it may be hard for you. And so you may need to learn some assertiveness. And again, you might want to see a therapist for that. But you've got to go where the people are. And you have to recognize how critically important it is. We are social creatures. And if we don't have good relationships, we're in trouble. There's a wonderful research project, 85 years now in going on, from Harvard University. It's about adult development, and they've been studying men and women and then their children and what happens to them. And their goal was to find out, what are the factors that determines whether you're going to live a happy and healthy life, you know, extend your lifespan? What are the factors? And it turns out there are a number of them, but number one, overwhelmingly, is having positive relationships. That turned out to be more important for your health and well-being and happiness than your genetic makeup, how rich you are, and whether you're famous or admired by others. They don't come close to the importance of positive relationships with other people.
That's
number one. And we don't give it enough attention. We have to be very intentional about it. Don't wait for somebody else to call you. You call them. Say, hey, just checking in with you. I thought of you this morning. Be responsible for your own relationship.
Be responsible for your own relationships. I love that. And there's one particular group I would like to target and call out today. And that is the group that says, I don't want to be a burden.
Oh, yeah.
I don't want to be a burden. So I will live alone and not be a burden. And you'll never know what's going on in my world. And that is actually burdensome on the people who love you.
Absolutely.
It truly is a burden that if you put up that wall that says you don't want to be a burden, you've now become a burden.
Oh, yeah, I know. You might be in having good intentions, but it's backfiring.
It's backfiring. It backfires every time. So our thought for today is go out and be a burden to somebody, because allowing somebody into your life and allowing them to help you or just coexist with you, you're giving them a gift. You don't even know it, right?
Yeah, oh, absolutely. Well, Arthur Brooks is a PhD at Harvard professor in the School of Business, and he has the most popular course there on happiness. And he has researched it very carefully. He has a background in social and psychological science. And he talks about if you want to be happier, you can't be happy all the time. That wouldn't even be good for you. But you really need to be very focused on relationships, family, and friends. And when talking about friends, he's talking about friends that are useless to you. In other words, it's not just a friendship where it's transactional. Well, you lend me your lawnmower, so I then use the sugar. That's transactional. They're kind of real deep friends where when 2 a.m, when you're ready to jump out of your mind, you can pick up the phone and they're going to be there for you, either physically or at least on the phone if they're far away. They're there for you because they love you and you love them. And you need 1 to 3 of them in your life. You don't need 5 or 10. You need 1 to 3. 1 may often be enough. But this is a real friend. In other words, you're not depending on them. That's what I mean by useless. For anything except the kind of moral support and others that they do for you.
Right. Just because you'll...
Yeah. Yes, you love them and they love you and you both know it. You need that in your life. Now, there's other kind of friends. They're fine and they do, you know, contribute to your happiness, but they're not enough.
Right. Love it. Dr. Peter Hartman, The Mind Behind the Mind Doctor. That's a podcast everyone should listen to. You said it's on Apple Podcasts, yes?
Apple Podcasts. It's on several, but Apple Podcasts is the one that I recommend. A couple of reasons, but one of them is the fact that you can write a review there. It's easy to do. And we really want the feedback. How can we do things better? How can I make a better TV series if that's ever accepted if I don't get feedback from the people who are listening and observing it?
Got it.
So, and also Apple does a good job of tracking how many people listen to that. So that's another kind of feedback that helps us.
Great. All right. Well, all of my listeners are going to give you a listen, and I so appreciate your company. I hope you'll come back soon.
Well, thank you very much. And I very much appreciate your inviting me on your show.